When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to I Am the Cute One, the most chaotic school dance in the podcast universe.
Let's spike the punch, grind to usher, and talk about our favorite topic, ourselves.
Hello, I am Chelsea, and I am the cute one.
And I am Donnie, and I am the cute one.
And we are here today to cover Jawbreaker. Marvelous.
Delightful.
I don't even want to have any banter with you at the top of this episode. I want to just jump in.
Well, I do. On Friday's episode of TGIF, you taught me how to wipe my ass, and I tried it, Chelsea. However, you forget I live in a New York apartment, so there's like a wall here and a bathroom sink here. So I can't wipe the way you told me to.
Okay, well, I didn't take into account spacing. I still think it's very wild that it took you to this point in your life to even attempt to wipe that way. Maybe my assignment for you this week will be when you're out and about and you are in the privacy of a public stall, a spacious kingdom of a toilet situation. Maybe try again.
I already decided I'm going to wait to do it until I'm at your house one day. But cool. I did like the idea of what you taught me. So I got up from the toilet, put one foot on the toilet seat, and then wiped that way.
Well, we don't have to have a Dora the Explorer type of pose. I don't think we need to manspread to get between the cheeks, but I also don't want this to become a segment or a bit that we have many updates to. So I think that instead of providing more commentary, I'm just going to start talking about Jawbreaker now.
Okay. It won't be a recurring bit until I try it the way you taught me. Like dead air, you can assume that means I have not got any new updates.
No news is
poo news.
Okay, cool.
Great.
I do love, anyway. We decided to launch our YouTube channel by truly spending upwards of 15 minutes of our pop culture episode to new listeners, new watchers, talking about you wiping your ass. And then we doubled down by starting this Jawbreakers episode by doing the same.
But you know what? YouTube is a wild place. I think if there is an audience that will really be drawn to this conversation, they're on YouTube.
Ask, believe, receive. And so it is. So I guess, cuties, if you wanted to see the motions of Donnie and me working through his current wiping situation, head over to our newly launched YouTube channel. So go to YouTube and search I Am the Cute One podcast. Or if you want the uncut, unedited versions of these shows, number one, God save your soul. And number two, head over to patreon.com/IamTheCuteOne for that, because that will be staying behind a paywall. We cannot unleash what we talk about in an unedited medium to the world.
Oh, no.
We do have enough self-awareness for that.
A little bit of
so, Jawbreaker. This day in history, this movie came out on February 19th, 1999. Mm. It was a Friday. Mm. If you're ready to feel old as shit, this year marks the 25th anniversary of this movie. I know.
Gross.
Payback was at the top of the box office with this movie in the 13th spot.
Wow. Taylor Swift would be happy.
That's true. Angel of Mine was the number one song. George Clooney appeared in his last episode of ER. Mm. And also, if a person born on February 19th, 1999, saved a penny every day starting at age 3, then by now that person has accumulated over $80.
Why age 3?
It's a choking hazard, Donnie. They wouldn't be saving pennies in toddlerhood. Those parents would be taken away.
God, I wish I was taken away.
Well, here's to hoping that. I want to just jump right into Jawbreakers because this was a formative movie experience of my youth. We know famously I have not seen many movies. Right. I have seen Jawbreakers.
Just one. It's just one Jawbreaker.
Do I keep calling it Jawbreakers?
You did it once and I was going to make the joke that it's just one and I was like, no, I'll just let her go. But once it became just what you call the movie, then I had to point it out.
Yeah, to quote George W. Bush, fool me once, shame on me. Fool me twice, can't get fooled again. Okay, that's fair. I will continue to call it Jawbreakers, but at least now you have addressed it for the cuties screaming, hitting their steering wheel as I add the S.
You're going to cause an accident one day. Road rage.
Yeah, probably. So I remember where I was when I saw Jawbreaker singular. Uh-huh. It was my 13th birthday. I was in Ocean City, Maryland. And this is where my mom was cool as shit for this. For my 13th birthday, going into my 8th grade year, she let me bring 5 of my friends to the beach for the weekend.
Oh.
This was like our movie watching experience there in the living room of the beach house. Now, I'm me, so I had no clue what it was going to be about. I was shocked by the immediate murder scene. And then, spoiler alert, the murder takes place on that girl's birthday. I did not sleep a wink. I was like, oh my God, I hope that my friends didn't get any ideas about a kidnapping scheme. I cannot die after having this amazing birthday.
If I was your mom, I would have got ideas. Because taking 5 13-year-old girls away for the weekend sounds like hell on earth. And I would have bought 5 Jawbreakers from Susie's candy store on the boardwalk and plopped them in each mouth.
You've seen this movie, right?
I have seen this movie. I don't remember when, but I do remember jerking off to it in high school. So I at least saw it around the time it came out.
Uh-huh. Do I want to know what part you jerked off to?
You'll find out.
Oh, good. And that's what we call in the biz a sneak peek, a teaser. So stay tuned for that one, I guess, cuties. Neat. You have the weirdest fucking taste.
How?
Just a couple weeks ago, we covered Showgirls, where I informed you that that movie is porn. And you were like, yeah, I can't really see it. Yet, Cruel Intentions, Jawbreakers.
Well, here's the thing. Jawbreaker and Cruel Intentions, I watched in middle school and early high school. So that's why. Showgirls, I didn't see until I was an adult.
Okay, so this does make sense. That did clarify something. So if you were introduced to the movies during your formative, horny teenage years, you were going to jerk it to anything.
I used to jerk off to the Rent soundtrack, Chelsea. The Rent Broadway recording.
The show about AIDS?
Yeah, but there's one song where they all have sex and like grunt and moan and
stuff. And get AIDS?
Well, one of them dies during that song, yes.
So anyway, we are here to talk about Jawbreaker.
Yes.
If today's episode makes you laugh or scream, please do us a favor and leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. We say this every week. Don't zone out. Listen. Because a 5-star review truly is the easiest, quickest, freest way to support the show. So if you like the show, if we make you laugh, leaving a 5-star review or subscribing over on Spotify helps this show be seen by potential new listeners and more chaotic cuties to add to the mix. So thank you in advance for doing that.
Yes, thank you.
Do you have any background or trivia for us today, Donnie?
It was written and directed by Darren Stein. He also directed GBF in 2013. Have you ever heard of that movie?
No, it sounds like that supplement store that bodybuilders go to.
I'm certainly not familiar with a bodybuilding store.
That's where I got the meth.
Oh, is it still in business?
Yeah, it's like a big chain.
Called GBF?
No, I think it's like GNC.
Oh, I'm familiar. No, that's a bank.
Oh,
well, but still, I know what you mean. You know what now. I mean. So GBF is not what we're here to talk about, but it stands for Gay Best Friend, and it is about this boy that gets outed by accident in high school. So then all the different cliques in the school try to make him their gay best friend because, like, he's the only one in the school, and they want it for popularity reasons. So we will cover that on the podcast one day. It did come out in 2013, so it is eligible. I thought about it for Donnie Appreciation Month, but it wasn't in my formative year, so there's no place for it in March.
Oh, and a shiver just went down my spine, because cuties, gird your loins. We are mere weeks away from kicking off DAM.
Now, this Dining Appreciation Month is pretty good. I think it's your best one yet. So anyway, this movie cost $3.5 million to make, and it only made $3 million. Lost $0.5 million.
Ooh.
Roger Ebert hated his life during it. He gave it 1.5 stars and said, "I knew high school comedies were desperate for new ideas, but the movie is a slick production of a lame script, which kills time for most of its middle half hour. If anyone in the plot had the slightest intelligence, the story would implode."
Yikes.
He was not happy.
Good heavens.
I brought three taglines this week, Chelsea, and your options are: you can suck its big stick, you can take over its life, or you can shove a jawbreaker down its throat.
Okay.
So the first one is, "Some of the sweetest candies are sour as death inside."
It started out so promising. I'm going to suck its stick.
Okay. The next one is, "Death totally bites."
True. I'm going to stick a jawbreaker down that one's throat.
Wow. So your only one left is to take over its life. And that tagline that you're doing that to is, "Suck it and see."
You know what? I am fine with that. I am good with my choices this week.
That's my favorite tagline. I'm going to make it my tagline.
I want it to go with that wrestler move from the 90s. Suck it and see.
Oh, yeah. I had fallen out of wrestling by the time Suck It came around.
I never really got into wrestling, but I was a middle school girl that went to school with middle school boys who certainly did say, "Suck it."
I used to have a Make 7 Up Yours t-shirt.
That means nothing to me. Is that a wrestler thing?
No, it's the 7 Up slogan. Oh. Make 7 Up Yours. But the shirt said Make 7, and then the back just said Up Yours. So people who saw you from the back thought you were being fresh. But really, you were just supporting 7 Up.
Huh.
But I was thinking about weird things that middle school boys do, and that was one of them.
Yeah, I followed the train of thought once you told me what it meant.
Perfect, thank you. Mm-hmm. So a little bit of trivia. Darren Stein, the writer and director, intentionally cast older actresses as the students in an homage to Grease.
I love that, and I'm going to be also following that homage when I do my recast at the end of the episode.
Me as well. You have to give the people what they want. Rachel Lee Cook auditioned for the role of Julie, but she didn't get it. And Missy Pyle auditioned for Courtney. She didn't get it either. But this is what's fucked up. In Missy Pyle's audition video, she wore heavy makeup and did the scene at prom where she, like, smeared it all. And they didn't pick her to be in the movie, but they stole that acting choice and put it in.
That's so rude.
It is so rude. One more bit of trivia. After being cast as Courtney, Rose McGowan requested to play Courtney and Fern as well. She wanted to do, like, some weird thing where she played, like, the girl rising into popularity and the girl who loses it. But the director was like, "No, that's not really what we're going for here.
We're not really doing a Dinner with the Klumps situation here, Rose."
But what a way to get an extra paycheck.
That is true. I love the can-do attitude of, like, So thanks for casting me. Love that we're going to steal Missy Pyle's bit. Also, can I play the other main role? Thanks.
So bizarre.
We need to cover Austin Powers because that is a real Mike Myers situation right there.
It is. Maybe we'll cover it in April as a palate cleanser from Donnie Appreciation Month.
That's like a perfect tapering off. You're going to be coming down from your month, but you will enjoy that movie. And I like that movie. So it will just be a safe place for everybody to rest after the trauma of the previous celebrations.
I understand. Yeah, that's beautiful.
Okay, so who in this movie, which character do you identify as?
Fern and Violet, 100%. I am a rule follower, but I will also social climb and ruin lives if I have the chance.
Yeah, I was going to yell at you if it was anybody but Fern / Violet. So I'm glad that we do have that self-awareness.
Yeah.
I think that I am Julie. I do have morals and values, but sometimes I get wrapped up in things that it's too late. Like, it's too late, and then I'm like, I don't think I liked that. Once I've hit my limit, I am not afraid to pull away. I'm not afraid to, like, do my own thing. I'm fine to, like, what did you say, deedle bop around. Like, I don't really feel compelled to adhere to whatever is going to make me popular, but I do also get wrapped up in it without realizing it.
Okay, that's fair.
And I think this is also a time for me to announce a very special thing for 2024. Jesus. I did wait until the end of February to think of a new New Year's resolution, I am happy to announce I am going to work to overcome my face blindness. It is a real affliction, but that isn't an excuse any longer. And I am going to work hard to look at people's faces and try to know who they are. So I knew the actress who played Julie. Uh-huh. Now, originally, I did think she was Carmen Electra. But,
okay,
personal growth, but then I thought to myself, no, that can't be right. So then I used IMDb and I did research and I learned Rebecca Gayhart. And then I remembered, oh, we covered Urban Legend.
Yes.
I've seen her before. So there you go. The more you know.
Okay. I appreciate that. I don't love that you had to research it. I wish you could have got there on your own. But you know what? Stepping stones.
Just like you wiping your ass, it might take a few tries to get it right.
Cuties, you know I cannot see a movie without pretending I'm in it, and now it's your turn. Have you ever tried to use the Force when no one's looking or thought about what superheroes would win in a fight? Then you'll want to stop what you're doing, unless you're driving, and visit Sideshow.com. Your eyes do not deceive you. They have a life-size, impeccably detailed replica of the child from Star Wars The Mandalorian.
Now, I don't mean to brag, but Sideshow did send me the child. I call him Baby Yoda. I have since learned that is not his name, but he is my son now, so I will be continuing to call him as such. And we have been playing dress up, having photo shoots, and just having a grand old time. But if that one doesn't speak to you, how about a movie-accurate statue of Christopher Reeve as Superman?
They got that too.
But just wait until you see the incredibly lifelike figures of Robert Downey Jr. as Iron Man.
We are thrilled to have Sideshow sponsoring our podcast today. They offer a wide selection of premium figures, statues, and fine art from the worlds of Star Wars, DC, Marvel, Harry Potter, Lord of the Rings, and so much more.
These limited edition, handcrafted, officially licensed collectibles bring pop culture's biggest icons to life in your home.
And here is the best part. You can get an exclusive $50 off your first order of $200 or more. It's a great opportunity for new customers to dive into the world of high-quality collectibles. Or you can gift it to that super geek in your life.
Perhaps that person in your life that you know would cringe when they hear that I've been letting my daughter sleep with my Baby Yoda. And again, that I refuse to stop calling it Baby Yoda.
Plus, shopping at Sideshow earns you 5% back in Sideshow rewards, meaning for every $100 spent, you get $5 back in rewards that can be used on future purchases. While geeking out is its own reward, your collection goes farther with Sideshow. So, what are you waiting for? Visit Sideshow.com, promo code CUTEONE right now, and get ready to let your geek side show.
Oh, that's clever. Sideshow. Like Sideshow.com? I get it. So now it is time. One of our longtime listeners is calling in with our one-minute synopsis of Jawbreakers. So without wasting any more time, Cutie, go ahead and take it away.
Oh, hello. Truman Capote here. If you're wondering why a man who has been dead since 1984 is doing a one-minute recap of Jawbreaker, you really don't know where you are, do you, darling? This is on par for the course for Chelsea and Donnie now, isn't it? Chaotic, makes you a little uncomfortable, not sure if you should replay this and listen again 600 times or turn it off altogether and wish they were dead. Anyway, Jawbreaker. Three teenage girls think it would just be so funny to play a prank on their friend for her birthday, so they tie her up and shove a jawbreaker in her mouth. But life, my dear, is what's funny, because the jawbreaker slides down her throat and kills her in cold blood. That's the name of my book, available now if you weren't aware. A popularity contest and faked assault ensue, leading to a climactic finish at prom where the bald-headed charm sister is stoned alive by corsages. But I do want to talk about that fine specimen sucking on the popsicle. However, I'm sure Donnie has more than enough to say about that, so I'll leave you with this. Bang, bang! Wow! Thank
you. Oh my goodness. I am gobsmacked, much like a jawbreaker in my throat.
Wait, what's that Willy Wonka thing called? Gobsmacking?
Everlasting gobstopper. The snozzberries taste like snozzberries. Okay, well, let's jump in. But before we start this recap, you need to know about them. The beautiful ones. The flawless four. You know them. They went to your school, too. They totally ruled. We've got Marcy Fox, a.k.a. Foxy, Julie, who was doomed to be popular because of that face, Liz Purr, the Princess Di of Reagan High, and Courtney, the leader of the group and Satan in heels, played by Donnie's nemesis, Rose McGowan. Again, go back to our TGIF episode a few weeks ago for his Charmed drama recap. I gotta say, Rose McGowan stands really came out of the woodwork to yell at you for that episode, Donnie.
Did that?
Oh, yeah. The cuties are consistent. When they slide into one of our DMs, it is to talk shit about the other person.
Oh, yeah. They never come to us face to face and say, like, Chelsea, you were wrong. Donnie, you're an idiot. No, they go to the other one.
They're like, can you believe this bitch? Thinking there aren't any Rose McGowan stands out here.
Wait, really? Rose McGowan stands came.
Yeah. I had many people being like, I think it's so funny you guys are about to cover Jawbreakers because I love Rose McGowan.
Oh, God. Well, somebody has to because I don't. And you know who else doesn't? My sister, Alyssa Milano.
So it's the morning of perfect Liz Purr's 17th birthday, and in lieu of cake or flowers, her friends decide a kidnapping is the perfect way to kick off the festivities. They tie her up, shove a jawbreaker in her mouth, and plan to take her out for pancakes. She's gonna die! Only, oopsie kitty, she really does die because gagging someone with a jawbreaker is a really fucking stupid thing to do. And when the girls discover that their bestie is now a corpse in the trunk of their convertible, everybody rightfully freaks the fuck out. Everyone, that is, but Courtney, who is not going to get fucked because she was sweet enough to play a little prank on her friend on her birthday.
If I were to like Rose McGowan, it would be in this movie and Scream only. It ends there. However, I am a hypocrite because as a person playing the prank, I think it is fun. And I would be giggling the whole time as I pull someone out of bed, kidnap them, put them in a trunk, and take them for pancakes. Mm-hmm. But as the person it's happening to, if I lived, I would never speak to these people again.
No. And I do think that there are two types of people. You are either a person who enjoys pranks, like enjoys giving and receiving pranks, or you do not fuck with pranks. You being the exception of do unto others as you don't want to do, uh-huh, or whatever that Bible verse was. You know, whatever Jesus said about pranks. Talking shit is my love language. I will verbally assault you for sport. And I enjoy when people do it back to me. Like, I love a good banter of somebody being mean in the name of love to me. But if it's a prank, if you're gonna jump out of somewhere, if you're gonna make me scream, if you're gonna tie me up in a trunk, no, you will be dead to
me. See, now this wasn't really a prank to me. Pranks like stop your day, don't let the inertia continue. Like, I'm coming to work, I don't need my stapler glued to the desk. I'm coming out to my car, I don't need spray or whatever, silly string on it. Like, I'm here to keep my day moving, and you are ruining that.
You would be reporting Jim Halpert to HR immediately.
Every single day. Every day. Mm-hmm. In fact, I would work my way up to HR, so I had the privilege of firing him myself.
You put his resignation letter inside of Jell-O and present it to him.
Yeah, and then I force feed him to eat it. You will sign this in front of me. Dig in. This was not really a prank. This was like a production. The wiggle room is tough because, yeah, if the friend didn't know in the room, but by the time we get outside, then it's fine. But if we're putting someone in the trunk of a car, that's when we need to, like, at least take the mask off and say, like, it's just us, girl.
Yeah. Surprise, bitch. Enjoy the trunk.
Yeah.
So, you know, look at me, a big old hypocrite, because I've been talking shit about true crime, mm-hmm, forever. I feel like it is voyeuristic. We are capitalizing off of people's worst moments. I find true crime as a genre just very troubling in our late capitalist society. However, again, do as I say, not as I do. I just watched this documentary called American Nightmare, and this is the one I was texting you about, Donnie.
I know.
I know you don't do documentaries, and if you just have to pick one, I do still want you to stick with the Bling Ring one.
Okay.
However, Cuties at Home, if you have not watched this, I think what's different about it is that the person involved is in the narrative of the storytelling.
Okay.
It's almost like they are taking their power back by telling their story rather than it being like, let's all be peeping Toms and look at the tragedy of this family. But basically, there was this case in California where this woman was shoved into a trunk, and the police department had just watched Gone Girl. And then it's a whole, like, was it Gone Girl? Did she plan this whole thing? Is she in on it with her boyfriend? It's only three parts. Dr. Bald was pacing in front of our screen. We watched all three episodes, boom, 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 didn't take a break. And he was pacing like he was watching a football game. It was intense. And Donnie, I do think that you would like it because it has tinges of Gone Girl.
Okay. I will attempt it.
You're not even trying to lie in a convincing way about that. You're like, uh-huh, I'm actually watching it right now.
Okay, here's the thing. I have no reason to lie to you. If I think the things that you watch sound stupid, I will tell you.
Do you think that sounds stupid?
No, and that's why I'm not lying. I will attempt it.
Okay, okay. Reality check. Liz is in the trunk of their car and she is dead. That is a sad, fucked up thing. But now, Courtney is a shoo-in for prom queen, and the girls have to cover up their crime by acting like they didn't just murder their bestie. So, after using their best motherly voice to call the school and say that Liz is out sick, they act like it's just any other day. They strut their stuff in the halls, cut into the bathroom for some pre-lunch makeup touch-ups, and get lectured for violating dress code. Everything is peachy fucking cute.
I hate a dress code, Chelsea. Yes. You do too?
Yes. But I want to hear your reasons first, and then we'll see if our reasons align.
Two things. One, it doesn't let people express themselves through dress. Uh-huh. Time out, time out, time out. I love a Catholic school uniform. So if we're doing a Catholic school uniform, yes, chef's kiss. I think everyone from birth to death should be forced to wear a Catholic school uniform. If I was president, that would be mandatory.
Can I say, as someone who had to wear a Catholic school uniform, fuck no.
But here's the thing. That would be the only thing. Like, here are the pieces you need to wear. Do whatever you want with it. So you can, like, simple life it and turn it into, like, a jumpsuit, or, like, Gossip Girl it and wear, like, the belt in your hair as the headband. Whatever you need to do with it.
You would be just going to work full Britney Spears, oops, I did it again.
Yeah.
I don't think you understand the material that Catholic school uniforms are made out of. I want you to think of what it would feel like to be hugged by a burlap sack.
Well, that's another problem. We're going to have better people design them. If I'm president, I can do whatever I want.
So, Mr. President, you don't like dress code except for Catholic school uniforms.
That's correct. Now, okay, back to why I hate dress codes.
Sure.
People need to express themselves through dress because, like, who cares if my skirt is longer than my fingertips? Who cares if my belly button is showing? There is hot people and there is not people. And I think punishing the hot people is rude. If I want to have a skirt so low cut or high cut, whatever, that my choach is almost out, as long as you don't see my choach, I'm not breaking the law by public indecency here. So as long as you do not see that, who cares?
Okay. I don't know how we always end up here.
Where are we?
The hots versus the knots is where we are, Donnie. We always end up here somehow. And you know what? Who says that you aren't a giving, caring person? Because you fight hard for the hots. You always will stand up for what's right for the hot people. Now, I am with you, though, in terms of people not being able to express themselves, but also dress codes are quite literally just a sign of our patriarchal society. Mm-hmm. Because dress code violations, it almost always affects the girls.
Yeah.
I remember getting sent to the principal's office because I was wearing a long sleeve t-shirt that was Kappa brand. So Kappa is a sports brand where the logo, it's a silhouette of two people sitting back to back. And they said, oh, that looks like those people are naked. You need to call your mom and have her bring you another shirt.
Ah.
So I missed science class because I was sitting there waiting for my mom to bring me another soccer shirt to wear.
Meanwhile, I was in my Make 7 Up Yours shirt and nobody said a thing.
Boys will be boys.
Yeah.
So it is predominantly girls that are targeted by this. And so then we are taught from a young age, like, ooh, don't wear a spaghetti strap. We don't want to be distracting the boys. It will be your fault. Rather than teaching the boys to, you know, just keep their fucking boner in their pants.
Right.
So we get there in different ways. The journey is different, but we arrive at the same destination. You show that choach.
Thank you. And for the girls, and a little bit for the boys who aren't used to it, and I am not excusing that behavior at all, like, keep your hands to yourself. Unless you have consent, or unless the boy in front of you is cute, then stick your kneecapping his ass off. But besides that, I think if you had the chance to express yourself in high school, and if boys had the chance to see girls in high school when there's still teachers watching and saying, like, don't do that, I think that showing choach in the office or showing choach at the club wouldn't be happening when people are adults.
Or if it is, it's not going to be like, well, what was she wearing?
Exactly.
Right? Like, then there's not the narrative that that is somehow to blame for whatever the stupid fucking man does next.
Uh-huh.
Instead of punishing for dress code violations, if we were just punishing boys for being creeps or girls, hashtag not all men, first of all, and hashtag yes, some girls, if we were all just disciplined for not following consent, instead of being disciplined because I wanted to wear a soccer shirt that I got at a tournament, I think the world would be a better place.
I agree.
Wow, look at us. We're so deep, Donnie.
We really are. Cuties, you can wear whatever you want when you listen to this podcast, especially if you're a hot. It's no secret that Chelsea and I are girls on the go. Between setting out crystals in the moon for Alyssa Milano and rewatching 2,000 episodes of a 25-year-old soap opera, there's barely any time to cook. And even if there was time, we all know Chelsea can't operate kitchen equipment if her life depended on it. And it kind of does, seeing that food is a necessity. But Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals make eating better every day easy. You'll have over 35 different options a week to choose from, including keto, calorie smart, vegan and veggie, and more. And there's even more to enjoy with over 55 nutrition-packed add-ons that help make your weekly meal planning even more delicious. So what are you waiting for? Get started today and have a feel-good week of meals ready to go. Fuel up fast with Factor's restaurant-quality meals that are ready to heat and eat whenever you are, with a wide variety of easy options for the entire day, like breakfast, midday bites, and more. Factor is the perfect solution if you're looking for fast, upscale options done easily, and it's flexible for your schedule. Get as much or as little as you need by choosing 6 to 18 meals per week. Plus, you can pause or reschedule your deliveries anytime. And the best part? Cuties, Factor meals are 100% ready to heat and eat, so there's no prepping, cooking, or cleanup needed. I just heard Chelsea scream in delight, all the way from Maryland. We've done the math. Factor is less expensive than takeout, and every meal is dietitian approved to be nutritious and delicious. So head to factormeals.com/cute150 and use code cute150 to get 50% off. That's code cute150 at factormeals.com/cute150 to get 50% off.
So unfortunately for the Fab Three, while they were busy thinking up a cover story for how Liz died and prepping a fake crime scene in her bedroom, weirdo stalker Fern Mayo, as in hold the mayo, has taken it upon herself to pop by Liz's house to bring her the assignments she'd missed while out sick. Now, I do want to make it clear that I do not condone the girl's choice to double down instead of coming clean, but if you're going to do something, do it right. Because not only are these bitches taking their sweet ass time, they're like stopping and playing with Liz's little trinkets and reading her old birthday cards, but they leave the doors of the house wide open, which lets our sweet little stalker, Fern, just waltz on in when no one answers the door. So not only does Fern overhear Courtney and the others confessing to their crime, but she sees the dead body and all hell breaks loose.
Two things. One, I am glad that I never have been in a situation like this. They're already in hot water and in above their heads. I think I would fully tie an anchor to my leg and dive in even deeper. If this happened to me, we're already later in the movie going to make it look like an assault and get this innocent man framed and brought into prison, whatever.
Sure.
So you don't care about other people's lives. Why not just kill Fern and make it look like she did it and then did herself?
I don't love how quickly that scheme came to you.
This is a loose end. Just make a fake collage, put it in her books, and then call it a day.
I don't think they'd have to make one. I think they would just have to open up her journal to page 3 through 26 for the evidence.
Oh,
there.
God. One more thing. Do you remember in the Poconos when I was wearing socks and the stairs were slippery and I asked you if I slipped down the stairs, what you would do with my body? Like, my thought was, if somebody dies, what are we going to do with the body?
Yeah. You were really thrown by my response of like, well, I would call the police because you slipped down the stairs because you were wearing socks and the stairs are wooden and I didn't push you. The Fab Three have themselves a little problem. Fern has power, the power to tell, and she's the kind of girl who tells. She's a tattletale, a rat. She's the shadow, they're the sun, but fate is on Fern's side, and she's offered something she's never even dreamed of. In exchange for her silence, Courtney will make her popular. Mm. And so Fern transforms from the mousy-haired little freak with a fondness for earth tones to Violet, a transfer student with a blonde pixie cut who doesn't answer on the first ring and never, ever eats in public, lest it make people think of digestion. Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts on this particular transformation?
They make her look cheap. She still doesn't look great in the face.
That's just Judy Greer, you ass.
Here's the thing. Maybe it is. But an older Judy Greer has come into the face where I do believe Judy Greer could be popular. Like in 13 going on 30, I get it. This Judy Greer could never be popular. I don't care if we change her name to Rosé. It's
Rosé,
just not happening.
Chardonnay, Merlot-A.
What do you think?
Well, the dream sequence of her being transformed, it's like Willy Wonka's take on the Pretty Little Liars opening.
Oh.
It was very eerie. All I needed was Lucy Hale giving an off-centered shh to the camera.
I know this will mean nothing to you, but maybe the cuties will appreciate it and come into my DMs. Judy Greer in this movie acts just like Allison Hannigan in Buffy. Like, I feel like she is truly doing an impression. She could come on the first 5 minutes of our episodes and do a 1 minute recap as Allison Hannigan. Do you know who Allison Hannigan is?
Yeah. I watched How I Met Your Mother.
Okay.
And
American Pie.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's a start.
Because I was going to say, I wish I could yes and you, but then I know I'm going to get yelled at because I still have not watched Buffy, et cetera, et cetera. However, I can yes and you because I could see Allison Hannigan playing this role in this movie.
Oh, yeah. She would have been great.
Yeah.
Sometimes when I'm bored, I rate the Buffy and Charmed cast side by side in order of hotness. Allison Hannigan is not the bottom of the list. I'll let everyone know.
Here we are again. The hots and the nots.
Truly when I'm bored by myself. I'm like, who is the hottest one? Is it Alyssa Milano or Charisma Carpenter? And we go back and forth with
depending
it.
On the day.
Yeah, we being everybody up here.
Certainly. You would have loved this really fucking cruel game my friends and I played in high school called Fugly, Ugly, Cute, Pretty, Hot, Beautiful.
Oh, I would have loved
where that. Where we would literally just say a name of somebody we went to high school with, and we would say if they were fugly, ugly, cute, hot, pretty, beautiful.
I love that. I think we should make it a segment on this show.
I think we talk enough shit about people's faces and bodies that we don't need to be calling anybody fugly.
Maybe not in a segment, but I won't be silenced if it does come up naturally.
Okay. So Liz's parents return home to their dead daughter, and after an announcement over the loudspeaker at school, soon everyone knows that she is deceased. Mm. I have to say, this movie does hit different, and I don't know if it's because I'm a parent or because like everybody in my life is dying all the time. But like, I forgot how graphic the beginning of this movie is. Like, we see the dead body a lot.
We do. I do want to talk about the announcement really quick. When they make the announcement over the loudspeaker for the whole school to hear that Liz Purr is dead. Number one, I don't know if a school would really, I guess they would. No, they wouldn't.
They would not be like, the chess team meeting has been moved to the auditorium and also Liz Purr kicked the bucket.
You don't think that you should pay homage to her in some way? Like, you can't just not talk about it.
Yeah, but I don't think the loudspeaker, while students are walking the hallway, imagine that it would be like the guidance counselors going from class to class and it's like, we have some sad news. If you need a process, come to my office.
Oh, that certainly would not happen in my school. The guidance counselors would not leave that office. They just wouldn't leave the office. You had to go to them if you wanted to talk about what you wanted to do after school. But my school did use the loudspeakers for other things. Number one, they made an announcement once saying that if you ate the yogurt that was in the teacher's lounge refrigerator, it did have medicine in it. So you needed to come to the school nurse immediately because you just medicated yourself. Then, for whatever reason, I think I was there for yearbook or something, but I was after school. And once all the students left for summer, they played over the loudspeaker, "Who Let the Dogs Out?" Because all the students were gone. So to like celebrate, the teachers played "Who Let the Dogs Out" on the loudspeaker. But I was in the yearbook committee, so we were still working on it. And I heard
that's
that.
That's hilarious. I actually think those are two very appropriate uses of the announcements.
I want to know if the medicine was always in the yogurt or if they did it because someone was eating their yogurt every day. And they were like, fuck this. You're going to tell on yourself today.
We're going to put some acid in there. You're going to think you're a glass of orange juice soon, bitch.
Uh-huh.
Well, you know what they say. There's no wrong way to grieve the best friend that you murdered. So while Julie distances herself from the clique and starts hanging out with the stud of the drama department, Zach, Foxy just continues being a follower, much to her father and Oprah's chagrin. And Courtney looks for a little kink and seduces her boyfriend with a big stick.
Two things. One, the dad trying to bond with Foxy about the Oprah special reminded me, my grandma told me when it first started, she told me I would love Grey's Anatomy and I should watch it because the whole show was about people sleeping with each other.
Was she wrong?
She wasn't wrong about the show or what I was interested in, but it felt odd.
Yeah, there is an element of, like, you feel seen and you do feel validated. Like, wow, you really know me, Grandma. But then are you thinking about your grandmother when Meredith and Derek are, like, hooking up in some stairwell?
Well, no, I was not thinking of my grandmother during that. But she knew me. Again, I couldn't get upset by it. But out of all of her grandchildren, I was the only one she didn't follow on social media. And I asked her about it once, and she said, I don't know what I'll see on there. And again, I can't be mad, but I am a little bit mad.
There was a period of time where you said if you hit a certain amount of followers, you would show whole.
That's true. So much so that at my grandfather's funeral, a woman came up to me and said, please don't. Like, it wasn't going
to
be here.
I would like to just take this time to say I hit 4,000 followers. It's a full moon tonight.
So that's that about Foxy. I do need to talk about the big stick scene, Chelsea. This sure. was when I used to masturbate.
I see. That does track. I'm happy to hear it, honestly.
Yeah, because what else would it be?
So in perhaps the most unrealistic part of this movie, it isn't long before the cop on the case, Detective Vera Cruz, starts doing her job and collecting clues. She quickly learns that Fern Mayo was seen at Liz's house around 3:30 p.m. the day before the murder was reported. The only problem? No one has seen Fern since. Enter Violette. Now, she may have traded her cardigan for a convertible, but during her police interrogation, she proves to be the same old Fern. This idiot sings like a canary. She tells Detective Cruz that she goes by Violette now and that she sat behind Liz in class where she spent her time sniffing Liz's apple-scented hair and playing connect the dots with the beauty marks on the back of Liz's neck. You know, totally normal, not at all worrisome habits. And okay, I lied. This is the most unrealistic part of the movie because there is no way that Fern was sitting behind anyone. This bitch is a front row girl if I have ever seen one.
Unless they didn't get to pick their own seat. Some teachers did do that where they punished the good kids so they could take care of the bad ones.
They punished the good kids by letting them sit in the back of the room.
By telling them where they had to sit.
I think we are coming from two different perspectives on this one as somebody who was frequently put in the desk right next to the teacher's chair.
Oh, no.
Joke's on them. I still talked the entire class. I dare you to find a spot in that room. I wouldn't
Oh,
talk.
If I was your teacher, I would buy you a jawbreaker.
Ba-dum-bum.
I know I talked about him in a throwaway comment earlier that you just fully ignored, but did I ever tell you about the guy whose asshole I used to stick my kneecap in?
Sadly, yes, you have. I'm glad that you noticed me ignoring that, because honestly, after your little mangina monologue the other week, I don't think we need to revisit the story. I don't think we need to remind the cuties of this torrid little tale.
And that's where you're wrong. You don't like it. Just like people say, I don't like Rose McGowan, the world does. You don't like stories about me sticking my kneecap in someone's asshole. The cuties, I think, like it. And you censor me just because you're the one that edits the podcast.
Remember earlier our conversation about dress code, consent, respecting people's bodies,
yeah, etc. But if I have long legs and my kneecap just happens to go right in your cushion, then I can't help myself.
Another point for the hots. I do want to give a little behind the scenes tea. After our 13 episode with Kelly from Beyond the Blinds, I did text Donnie as I was editing and I said, hey, this Mangina story, some of it's going behind a paywall. And you would have thought that I threatened to shove a jawbreaker down Donnie's entire family the way that he reacted.
Well, because you said there's a thin line between funny bullying and real mean bullying. And I think that the story approached that. And I disagreed. So then I messaged the girl that it was about. And I said, do you think the things I did to you were real mean bullying or funny? And I sent the screen cap of you saying what you said to me. And I sent it to her. And she said, ha ha, a point for Chelsea. And I was like, well, no, you didn't mind when I blank, 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 or blanked to you. I have to put blanks because you'll just edit it out again.
So about half of that Mangina story, it is behind the paywall. So patreon.com/IamAQ1. Who needs Folgers when you've got Donnie's Mangina in your face?
Oh, God.
And if Detective Cruz didn't have enough to digest after Fern's little TED talk, she has more to chew on after she gets a call from Courtney, who says she's finally ready to give her some information. Courtney tells Detective Cruz that Liz had a craving for strange men. And with this piece of false information, Detective Cruz has a new lead in the case.
I love Detective Cruz when she slams great. That jawbreaker on the table. And then later when she's like, who was she fucking? I always assumed if I was in the police academy, I would be a good cop because I just have the power to like wrap people around my finger and make them do what I want.
Okay, wait, to clarify, you mean like good cop, bad cop, not like good at your job cop.
Yeah, like okay. Even though she was by herself, she was very much bad cop.
Right.
So I think even if I was by myself, I would be good cop in terms of like, yeah, I'm your friend. You can tell me anything. Oh, you just told me you killed someone. It's time to arrest you. Like that. I think I would be great at that. It's why I think I'll win Big Brother. However, I do think me being bad cop would have its advantages as well, because since I am seen as like Willy Wonka and so silly and weird, I think if I did yell, who was she fucking? I think people would really be unnerved and just tell me everything.
We're really having a Willy Wonka moment here. I watched Timothée Chalamet in that penis hat one single time and now it's all I can talk about. But it's like the end of Charlie and the Chocolate Factory when he loses his shit, when he was like, we had to have the ceilings cleaned and fuck you and my Oompa Loompas will be suing. That would be jarring for you to go from like, ha ha ha, my Mangina, to like, you tell me the fuck did this.
Yeah. You know what? I always pretend I'm a detective when I'm alone, and sometimes I take a file, like a, what do you call that? Like a manila folder, and slam it on the table and say, the profile doesn't fit the profile. It's really good.
The profile doesn't fit the profile.
I don't know. I saw it in a Sandra Bullock movie once. She was a detective.
I have a couple of follow-up questions. Number one, do you have this manila folder just for this little exercise? Or
well, no,
it...
like I had it to bring like passport photos to CVS or whatever. Mm. But then once that was done, now it's just a prop.
Reduce, reuse, recycle. That's our Donnie.
Uh-huh.
I don't have actually any more questions. Case adjourned. I object. I would love to have a sit down 10 minutes with your neighbors. Just 10 minutes. I have many questions for them and their experience living in this world.
I always think our walls are thick. Our apartment's only two rooms, so I can't really hear Quinn in the bedroom when I'm in the living room, vice versa. But apparently, the walls from one apartment to the next are thin, as you heard last week when the man was banging in the other apartment. One time, I was singing in the shower, and then when I left my apartment, the little girl next door was leaving hers and looked at her mom and said, is this the boy that always sings?
Mom was like, yes, honey, and the profile doesn't match the profile. Anyway, meanwhile, Violet continues to rise to the top. The rules have been changed. We've got Ashley Banks saving her seat in class. Rumors fly that she's a bisexual model who toured with Madonna. And she tries to steal Julie's new boyfriend, Zach. For the first time in her life, people are giving her the time of day.
I think Violet going after Julie's boyfriend was the beginning of the end. I think she lost the plot. She was already immersed in the popular culture. She was a part of this group she always wanted to be a part of. She basically took Liz Purr's life. So, like, leave it there. But then going after Julie's boyfriend, this is already someone that knows the bad things your little group has done and is just keeping it a secret because she was involved. But, like, if you fuck with her, it will come out.
Yeah, but that wasn't her losing the plot. That was Courtney losing the plot because she was the one who was like, you should sign up for the drama department. We need to get you a man. What about this guy? Mm. Like, that was Courtney being vindictive. But again, Courtney, look at the situation here, babe.
Yeah.
This is not good optics. Push Fern in a different direction.
Agreed.
So when Violet starts driving a red convertible with the license plate, bitch, Courtney starts to fear that she's being eclipsed. And in a bathroom confrontation, Courtney tries to remind Fern that she created her and she can destroy her too. But it's time to stop pretending because Violet still has the power. She knows the truth. She knows what really happened. And just like that, Frankenstein has lost control of her monster.
In this scene, when they're arguing in the bathroom and Violet blows smoke in Courtney's face, that wasn't practice. And the director told Judy Greer to do that. So that's why Rose McGowan takes a cigarette and throws it, because she didn't like it in real life.
Ooh.
So, like, it made a wonderful scene. However, I hate a director that does this.
You think it's unfair to just tell one person?
Yeah. And, like, it does get a natural reaction from the person. But, like, what if that natural reaction was to get out of character and curse her out? Like, Judy, you fucking bitch. Like that. You can't use that in the movie. And now what?
Well, I guess today's theme is consent. It shouldn't be that you sign on to a project and then anything goes. Like, oh, well, you signed up for it, so you can get smoke blown in your face.
Different strokes, I guess.
For different folks. So while all of that is going on, Julie is still riddled with guilt. And when she tells Zach that Violet is actually Fern, because for whatever reason, nobody in the school has caught on to this little scheme, Zach asks why Courtney would even give Fern the time of day, which causes Julie to admit to everything. But when Julie goes to the police to confess, Detective Cruz tells her that they've already got somebody in custody and the semen matches, which raises some alarm bells. This means that Courtney found a rando to have sex with in Liz's bed to make it look like a sexual assault and murder, which, number one, sick. But number two, you can't say the girl doesn't go the extra mile to put in the work. And speaking of putting in the work, when posters featuring a very unfortunate school photo are taped up all over the school, Violet is exposed for who she really is. And bandaged like a Civil War veteran, Fern falls from grace.
I love when this happens in any movie. It's why I love Mean Girls with the Burn Book. It's why the original Mean Girls, Harriet the Spy, always did it for me. Did you see that movie?
I've been afraid to admit this one. I've never seen Harriet the Spy.
See, now I want to go through and change what we're watching in Donnie Appreciation Month.
You're acting like if we don't cover a movie in Donnie Appreciation Month, we'll never see it again. Cuties, there have been multiple mornings that I have woken up to a complete reconfiguration of Donnie Appreciation Month. And I keep saying, Donnie, when it's March 1st, just send me a list. Even better, just week by week. You're acting like I know what movie we're covering next week without my outline. Like, just surprise
me. You know why? This is our third Donnie Appreciation Month. The first year, it was obvious. My top four movies are my top four movies. Obvious. The second year, yes, we rounded out with the next four. But now we've reached, like, the C level where there's, like, 27 movies that are all equal importance to me. And I don't know which one to pick. So when I pick one, I'm like, oh, this is it. And then 3 days later, I'm like, oh, no, that's not it. That's not
it. She hasn't seen Harriet the Spy. How will I go on?
So back to Harriet the Spy. Okay. That's basically what happens. These little fuckers in elementary school bully her. So then, because she's been spying on everyone the whole movie, she takes all their secrets and airs them out to the school and fucks them all
up. Did you just give me the end of the movie that I haven't
seen? It's not a twist, Chelsea.
Once again. I'm telling you, I have not seen the movie, and you proceed to tell me what I'm guessing is, like, one of the last couple scenes.
Well, no, there's fallout, of course.
Of course, okay. So soon it's prom night, and while Courtney is taking Dan because he was born to be prom king, Julie discovered that Liz's old birthday card accidentally recorded Courtney admitting that she killed the teen dream. Deal with it. So as prom king and queen are announced, balloons rain down and Courtney accepts her crown. And then the recording of Courtney confessing to her crime is played over the loudspeakers. So as Courtney gets a taste of her own medicine and the entire school turns on her, Julie blows her a little kiss, tells her to eat shit, and everyone lived happily ever after. Well, except for Courtney and Liz. The end.
I love when villains are punished from their own doing.
This is going to be the recording I play as your crowned prom queen. I love when villains are undone by their own doing. Poetic, really.
The book that I wrote in high school called The Drama Diaries, loosely based on the drama club members of my high school. Mm-hmm. In it, the one girl tried to ruin this other girl's life, so she set up a video camera to record her having sex so she could play it during the school play. But then... That didn't happen in real life. That was just in my book. Sure. She set it up in a hotel room on prom night. But then the girl that set up the camera, her boyfriend cheats on her with the gay boy, and that's on camera instead. So that plays for the whole school to see. Now, it really was a wonderful book. However, since the whole plot is tied into filming underage people having sex, it could never get published.
Well, you just move it to college years. Oh,
we found a loophole. I'm back in it.
So, final thoughts. If we were to bring this movie to present day, who would you cast or what would the plot to a sequel be?
Okay, I would recast it, but I would still pay homage by casting like older actresses in these high school roles. But I would make them all former Disney stars. So it'd be like Miley Cyrus, Demi Lovato, Selena Gomez, that whole little crew.
I like that. Thank you. I like that a lot. I feel like this is played out perhaps, but she's born to play these type of roles. Emma Roberts as Courtney, Florence Pugh as Foxy, Kiernan Shipka as Julie, and then come with me on this one. So I don't know if you're watching Mr. and Mrs. Smith, the remake, the show with Donald Glover, but Mrs. Smith, Maya Erskine.
Okay.
She is great in that show and she has like comedic timing and I feel like she could really pull off Fern. Dev Patel as Zach. And then you got to have Judy Greer come back as the teacher.
I'm into that.
So final thoughts. What about this movie aged well and what aged like blockbuster?
What aged well? I think Judy Greer has only gotten more popular with time. So yeah, she's the career to follow in this movie. Also the message of how you can like shoot up in fame or popularity and then get knocked down just as quickly. I think that rings more true today. Then
Matt Rife would like to take the mic at this time.
Yeah, I think people love watching you shoot up to fame, but then love watching you fall even more. And blockbuster, since I have the floor, I'll keep it going. I think when a show or movie has Glee-like snarky dialogue that was like edgy of the time, it makes it age very poorly because it was already at the time like on the fence of being appropriate or not. So now 25 years later, it's certainly not appropriate, which is like 98% of Courtney's lines. Also, covering the death as an assault gone wrong in a comedy doesn't age well. If this was just a horror movie, I think like maybe we could get away with it, but in a comedy it's tough. Also, I don't know if it's racist, but it feels racist that Ashley Banks is the most famous teenage character in this movie and she's just an extra.
Very Usher.
Yeah.
Like how Usher in all of those teen comedies was always on the poster, but then would have like three lines in the movie. Yeah, that's very true. I feel like this is where it toes the line of like it ages like blockbuster, but also unfortunately captures what high school was like in that time. The rampant homophobia across the board. And I do feel like Fern was very queer coded, but in a like she's a crazy lesbian stalker type of way.
Yeah.
But again, the slurs very timely for the 90s in high school. I feel like what aged well, the cast, I think that it was still campy and fun. I do think that we as a society still do view really horrific, violent things as entertainment. So unfortunately, that kind of holds up. And the Donnas playing at the prom. I love the staple of feminist girl bands being in every single campy, like girl power comedy of the 90s. I really wish that we could start to bring that back of like just a random cameo from somebody.
I agree. Because it makes it feel more like a team sport. Like everybody wants to be a part of this movie. Whereas now they just throw shit on Netflix and hope that Sydney Sweeney's enough. No offense, Sydney Sweeney did not ask for this, but neither did I with your movies.
All right, quick, fugly, ugly, cute, pretty, beautiful, Sydney Sweeney.
A pretty sloth.
A pretty sloth?
She does look like that thing from Ice Age, but a pretty
Why
version.
Why did we need to bring him into this?
That's what she looks like.
I know, but you could have just said, you know what? Shame on me. Again, George Bush, he said you can't get fooled again, but look at me now. This is my 9/11. Okay. Well, on that note, we made it to the end without mentioning that tragedy. We almost forgot, but hashtag never forget. Next week, well, here's the thing, cuties. It was supposed to be kind of like as we wrapped up our Pretty Wild coverage on the Patreon, we were going to cover this next movie. Now it's kind of a
halfway point.
It's a companion piece. But we are covering The Bling Ring, which I've never seen the movie. I've consumed all content Alexis Nyers and her family adjacent, but not this movie. So can't wait to hear another 90 minutes of Emma Watson delivering an amazing performance of an American accent.
No, it's 2 hours and 45 minutes of it. No, I'm just kidding. I'm kidding.
Donnie, I almost had a heart attack. It's about to be like hashtag never forget this podcast because I'm never coming back. Okay, well, on that note, go over to Patreon, patreon.com/IamTheCuteOne. We are back on our grind of the Pretty Wild coverage, and then we'll see you next week for The Bling Ring.
Perfect.
All right, talk to you later.
Love you like a sister. Bye.
Thank you for listening to I Am The Cute One. If you want more, head to patreon.com/IamTheCuteOne for uncut, unedited, and unhinged video and audio footage of current episodes, as well as even more bonus content.
And if you like what you heard, please be sure to leave a 5-star rating and subscribe to our show. And to help us grow this community of chaotic cuties, share an episode with a friend you think would pass the vibe check.
And to see the madness, check out our YouTube channel, where video footage from all current episodes are posted weekly.
You can follow me at Real Donnie Wood on Instagram and all other social media platforms.
And if you want more of my personal brand of chaos, check me out at Oh No Chels.
Talk to you later. Love you like a sister.